This is Graham. He's new to PokerStars. Graham doesn't know it yet, but he's a VIP. He's entitled to claim points against any number of rewards in the PokerStars VIP program. From PlayStations to plasmas, from Porsches to seats at major on- and offline poker tournaments. You see, he started collecting VIP points the minute he joined PokerStars as a real money player. Because we don't think you should have to apply or be in the know to earn rewards. He'll be very excited when he finds out. Just you wait and see. Wait for it. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP and find out why all other reward schemes seem just a little, well, inaccessible. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Annie Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's the week of August 21st, 2009, and you're listening to the best poker cast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long. A little early poker cast for our fans this week because we'll be on the ship here pretty soon.
Yeah, when there's no way we could, you know, post from the Gulf of Mexico, so
we could do a ship to shore phone.
I want to make a ship to shore call, Reed. Well, speaking of calls, my brother rang me up yesterday, and he's like, "Hey, man, I got somebody who's interested in going on the cruise." And when I explained to him it was full, you know, and that maybe he'll come on our next cruise in March, he's like, "Oh, that's cool. This guy's a real player. He plays a lot. He starts listing all the rooms he plays at." And then he says, "Frank, do you remember the Frank?" He says, "Frank, do you play cards? You know, you play poker?" And he's like, "No, my brother plays, you know, but you know, I'm just not into the whole competition thing." And he says, "Oh, then I can't tell you what I wanted to tell you." And he's like, no, you can tell him. He said, "Well, do you play Texas Hold'em?" And my brother's like, "Yeah." He says, "Well, you know how starting hands have nicknames, you know?" And my brother's like, "Oh, yeah, you know, like the Doyle Brunson's 10-2. And he's like, yeah. He said, "Well, they got a new one, could call it the Bobby Bowden," which, you know, in Florida, people will appreciate this because he's the coach of the Florida State Seminoles. And they said, "Well, what's the nickname? What's the cards for?" And he said, "Well, it's a King Deuce." And he says, "They call it the Bobby Bowden because if Bobby Bowden had a better kicker, he really would be king." And I thought that was pretty funny, you know. These guys have just so much time on their hands at the table.
Oh, my God. You know, hey, that's, you know, and you mentioned, you put this on the notes this week, and I'm like, King Deuce, I just don't get it. I don't get it. But now I do. That's great. Wide right.
Wide right. Three years in a row against Florida or whatever it was, and they missed a field goal wide right from their kickers. They would have won the game. And so that's pretty funny. I don't know how Bobby Bowden's hanging around anyway. I tell you the truth. That guy's just
true. He's a legend.
He probably waited around until they named a poker hand after him. Now he'll retire.
Yeah, you know, we have plenty of time on the cruise. Maybe we just sit around and come up with a bunch of worthless hand names.
All right.
And see if we can start spreading them around the world. Talk about the nicknames and stuff. It's not really a nickname, but I've noticed this a couple times recently. It just kind of makes me chuckle, including our good friend Lee Childs, who's back for the Hand of the Week today. He uses this phrase, too.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm just curious where it came from. All right. So, you know, when people call, right, Chris?
Yeah.
Now they're kind of hip to. I just smooth called.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I just smooth called.
Yeah.
Which I've always thought was kind of funny because a smooth call is a call.
Yeah.
You're just saying an extra word. I mean, obviously there's some information you're giving by when you say I'm smooth calling.
Right.
It means I'm not raising when I probably could. I'm just, you know, smooth calling. But still, calling is fine, right?
Well, you're doing it in a really cool fashion. You're smooth. You know, smooth call.
Well, and then also, then it became flat calling.
Right.
I just flat called him.
Yeah.
Again, same thing.
Yeah.
You just call, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You don't have to flat call or smooth call or Jumanji call. You just call.
Jumanji call.
Well, then now, this is, I love how the language twists around the vernacular now. Now I hear people saying, "I just flatted him."
Yeah.
Now the word call, which is the only word you need, is not even in the word anymore.
I know.
Now I'm just flattening them.
Flatting. You know what? Flatting to me sounds like you ate too many beans. That's it. Sounds like it's, you know, flatulence. You know, it's like a hybrid of the word flatulence.
Well, what I think is more interesting, other than just laughing about it, is, you know, we've got a lot of beginners that come to the show over the years, and, you know, every once in a while we'll get an email from them saying, "Hey, guys, love the show. I just don't understand what the hell you guys are talking about."
Yeah.
Using all these words, and I just, you know, I think it's, you know, again, when you're into poker as much as we are, you just kind of, like, pick up on this stuff, and you start using it.
Yeah.
And it just leaves a whole class of people out there. Like, you know, I can imagine people, oh, what the hell does flatting mean? And
yeah,
probably going to find some book and can't find it because it's kind of relatively new.
Exactly. If you're playing in a vacuum with your home game buddies and you don't really watch on TV or listen to too many shows like ours, yeah, you're just not going to have any idea. It's like another old language.
So, you know, I'm gonna take a stand here, I think.
You think? Wait, you can't take a stand and think.
Come on, everybody knows me, knows that that I'm going to be wishy-washy like that, right?
It's like your Senator Kerry.
I am going to go back to the basics from now on, I think. We'll see how long this lasts.
Okay.
And I'm not going to play into this new cool jargon that all the kids are saying.
Well, let me ask
when
you
I'm
this.
When calling or flat calling or flatting, I'm just going to call.
Where are you going to cut it off at? Right? Where are you going to cut it off at?
I'm going to be as basic as I can.
Yeah.
Okay. As basic as I can.
Can I call you on it when you aren't basic?
Absolutely, because
right.
I know it's going to last probably 4 minutes if I'm lucky.
Just like your New Year's resolutions.
Exactly, but I'm going to be dedicated over these next 4 minutes to using the first words that Wild Bill Hickok came out of his mouth about poker.
You know what's interesting, too, is when you read Super System, you learn that the flop was actually called the turn. And somehow it got changed to the flop over the years.
See? Probably some cute-ass kid, you know,
yeah,
coming up with some words out there. And
but,
look
now,
at where
but now, just like bling, it's part of the English language, and will get its own entry into the dictionary. So you need to be careful where you're cutting us off at, you know? I'm watching you. I'm watching you.
All right. I like having the spotlight there. Yeah, I know you'll call me on it.
All right.
All right, so we've got a couple interesting lists that have been on our notes for a long time. Actually, I think this came out in February.
Jeez.
But, you know, I like lists. People like lists, right?
Sure.
That's why you always have that's why Letterman is so popular. You know, it's not because of anything else. It's just, you know, he has a top 10 list every night, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So there's a reporter for the Online Poker Examiner named Stephen Ruddick. And back in February, March, he put two lists out. One, the 5 most important moments in poker history. And he followed it up with the 5 worst moments in poker history. Of course, that list is probably a lot more fun, so we'll do that second. But I thought it'd be interesting just to throw these out and see what you think, Chris.
Well, let me ask you, do you think anything has happened since February that might throw these lists off?
I don't know. I'm just, you know, in the interest of full disclosure, in case there's something that we're forgetting. I just, you know, I don't want to send Steven down the river here because he, you know, posted this in February and just took us 9,000 months to actually share it with the AM Nation, all right?
Okay.
Off my back. Save your criticism for when I flat. All right, so his 5 most important moments in poker, Johnny Moss versus Nick the Greek Dandelos. You know, that big...
that 3-month battle or whatever.
Yeah, that huge battle, yeah. Of course, it was before our time, so
yeah,
we don't really care, right? Chris Moneymaker wins the WSOP in 2003.
Agreed.
Yeah, hard to say that's going to be on the list. Rounders in 1998, and I'll pause here while you gush over this movie for the 4,000th time on the Andy PokerCast.
I will merely say agreed.
The whole cam.
Agreed.
Yep, can't. I was interviewed on a radio show this week, Chris, and it was kind of a real basic interview when the guy asked, you know, how poker became so popular. It's kind of like I was going old school there.
Yeah.
I had to reach back, and I'm like, oh, yeah, well, you know, whole cam, Rounders, and Chris Moneymaker. And, of course, those are the 3 of the top 5 here. And then the final one, the first hand of real money online poker is played. It says the first real money poker game was dealt on January 1st, 1998, which I hadn't thought about. But obviously, online poker has been a huge boost.
Now, do you want to like debate a little bit about what you think? I would like to take that Nick Dandelos one out of there and just substitute anything like that just has to do with, like, you know, if he's talking about American history, you know, a guy bringing a deck of cards on the boat to, you know, New Orleans, or, you know, I mean, or something like that, or
okay,
poker.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, those guys playing poker for 3 months, you know, a lot of people even debate whether or not it actually happened. And happen the way they say it. So I would take that one out and do something more historical. But other than that, I think those, as far as bringing it to where it is today, that's absolutely. I think Super System is more important than Nick Dandelos.
Yeah, yeah. Or even just the whole creation of the World Series of Poker, you know, back.
Yeah,
those guys sitting around and playing for the cup. But obviously, I mean, Steven, by his picture, he looks like a young kid. And, you know, obviously, these lists are always, no matter where they are, they're always influenced by recent history more than past history.
Yeah.
But not in a bad little list to get us talking.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, so now on to the fun stuff. The 5 worst moments in poker history, according to Steven Ruddick from Online Poker Examiner. Aces and eights, the death of Wild Bill Hickok.
See, he can go all the way back for Wild Bill.
Yeah.
He can go back to the 70s for a Super System or something. But, you know, obviously that Nick Dandelos match happened a long time ago, too. But, yeah, that's pretty bad.
somebody died.
Yeah,
you know,
that's can't get much worse than that.
Next on the list, another death. Death of Stewie the Kid Unger.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And then here's an interesting one. The poker explosion post-2003. And, of course, he goes on to how it's ironic that this is on both of his lists. But
what exactly does he mean that it's bad for
poker? Well, he says he misses the days when great poker players could thrive in anonymity rewarding luck, and, you know, tournament tables look like NASCAR, blah, blah, blah. I mean, obviously, it's a different game now, and, you know, if you're not into marketing and self-promotion, that kind of stuff, you probably did like it back before the boom, even though there's so much more money and people playing it now.
I have to disagree with him there, because otherwise we wouldn't have a show and a magazine and website and all that stuff. So
yeah, that's right. So essentially he's saying one of the worst things that ever happened is Ante Up.
Yeah, I'm not agreeing with him there at all.
No. We're not going to stand for that.
We're going to write this guy.
All right, next on this list, Tilt, ESPN's poker drama.
Oh.
All right, I'll give him a little chuckle there for being creative, but I actually like Tilt.
I did too. And then history? I mean, really? That's in history? A TV show? Come on!
I mean, there's far worse poker shows on TV, like, you know, maybe that NASCAR player's playing on Speed Channel, or what was that hip-hop one you liked?
Yeah, it was Hip-Hop Hold'em.
Yeah. There's far worse shows. Okay. No, obviously, Tilt was way over the top, but that was part of its charm,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly.
I was kind of sad when it didn't come back. You just got all quiet on me, buddy.
Well, I was so excited. I thought you were going to tell me what the number one worst thing in poker was.
Well, I don't know whether he actually numbered them, but here's the final one.
Okay.
The absolute and ultimate bet scandals.
Okay.
All right. Of course, that was the biggest problem we've ever had online. So that if online poker is going to be on the best list, you got to have the worst moment in online poker.
All right, here you go. I got take out the one with, you know, 2003 post-boom, because that's bull. The one they substitute in is the 60 Minutes report. On the absolute.
Ah, oh, there you go.
There you go.
Let's
sub that one in there.
A little hack job done by one of United States' most respected news gathering operations. Absolutely. All right. Now, I'm not sure, and, you know, I'm trying to read through. I don't really know what his problem with the aces and eights. Obviously, you know, I never had a chance to meet Wild Bill or play with him.
Right.
I'm going to assume he was a nice chap, and therefore I'm sad that he died, but. I mean, I guess his point is that people relate to the poker being in back rooms and smoky gambling halls, which obviously we're trying to overcome now. But I don't know whether we can pin that all on Wild Bill and getting popped in the back of the head with his aces and eights.
Yeah, maybe it's just the fact, too, that if someone died because they were a better poker player than someone else is not a good thing, you know. I don't know. But, yeah, you can't pin everything on that one moment.
Oh, well, it was always fun to talk about some lists like that.
Yeah,
so
cool list.
Andy F. Nation will have something to say about these, too.
All right, well, let's see what's piling up on the news desk.
the World Series of Poker and ESPN have announced a 7-year extension to ESPN's television rights for poker's largest tournament series, keeping the WSOP on ESPN through 2017.
Yes.
Chris, no word on how quickly into this deal they will eliminate everything but the main event from the coverage plans.
Well, that's what,
pretty soon.
That's probably in the wording. It's probably just a 7-year extension to broadcast the main event, you know, and everything else is just by the wayside now. It's ridiculous. But at least I get to see poker for another 7 years after that.
Very true, very true. All right, California Indian tribes are at odds over online poker. According to the Examiner, the Morongo Band of Mission Indians is working to put together a consortium that includes the Commerce Casino, Chris. Oh. The push for the legalization of online poker in the state, but the California Tribal Business Alliance says such legislation would hamper, not help, the state's Indian gaming industry.
I think that's a narrow way of thinking of it. I think that they probably haven't explored all the possibilities that the tribes have, you know, the Mission Indians have. So I think that's a narrow-minded thinking. I think that they should legalize it and reap the benefits.
Yeah, I mean, one of the advantages, and I use advantages depending on who you are, but the advantages of going the state route to legalizing is the people that are pushing it can write the language to benefit them. So
yeah.
Obviously I think that's what would happen here in Florida with the legislation that may come of it. But certainly I would think the Morongo Band of Mission Indians and this consortium is not going to push legislation that's not going to help them, right?
Yeah, no, exactly.
All right, and then finally, Thomas Durduan has his first opponent in his latest challenge, according to USAPlayers.com. Sam George has accepted the challenge of 500 hands of heads-up poker in Pot Limit Omaha or No Limit Hold'em. Each player must buy in for $500,000 and cannot quit until they've gone broke or reached 500 hands.
Wow. All right, well, let's listen to our hotline clip. We got this one coming from Doug from Minneapolis. The hotline number is 813-448-1120. You call that number, we use it, we give you something nice.
Hello, Scott and Chris. This is Doug from Minneapolis. Just thought I'd give you a buzz. It's Sunday morning. I'm sitting here reading the op-ed page, and George Will from the Washington Post writes a great article about what the government needs to do for online gaming, poker specifically, and brings up lots of good points, and just thought I'd share.
Yeah, so Chris, I stole this column from George Will. It was in our local paper, the St. Petersburg Times, the former provider of our weekly checks. And yeah, it was all about online poker. Howard Lederer was heavily quoted in it. And you know, George Will, obviously, you know, he swings a big bat. He's well respected. So I mean, having somebody like him write a column that was printed in probably 4,000 newspapers certainly can't hurt the argument, I don't think.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know this for sure, but, you know, our good friend Mike Faso is on the editorial desk there, and I wonder if he had a role in getting this in the paper or certainly edited it. But good column, and so check that out. When you can find it probably anywhere that George Will's published.
Yep. Yeah, my dad called me. He's like, "Hey, I got this poker online thing with Howard Lederer in it. Do you want it?" I was like, "No, that's okay, Dad. Howard Lederer, I know all about it. Thanks, buddy."
Excellent, excellent. All right, Doug. Well, we appreciate the call to the hotline, and we are going to send you a Chinese Year of the Animal card protector from poker-pig.com. Really, really cool. Go to poker-pig.com, check those things out. But Doug, email us your address and also your birth year, and we'll get a custom one out to you as soon as possible.
Awesome. All right, well, we got a mailbag letter from New Zealand. Gotta love that. What's the postage on New Zealand?
we're big down under, though.
Yeah, I know. And
does New Zealand actually count as down under?
Absolutely.
Is it just Australia? No, it's the whole kind
under.
Of...
They're definitely down under. They're to the right of them, so they're down
under. Well, I know where they geographically are. I just didn't know whether the term down under was all-inclusive of Australia, New Zealand, and Tasmania.
That's true.
But you're saying it is.
To me, it's down under. So I could be wrong. I could be wrong. but you know, these kids with these new vernacular, like using flatting when they talk.
Yes,
so
that's
I don't want to be lumped in with them. But I'll read the letter.
All right.
It's from Daniel, and he says he typically plays $2, $3 no limit hold'em and buys in for $100. He said,
"What?
Yeah, that's what. Well,
it's not
hey,
Florida, buddy.
I know.
Buy more.
What are you gonna do? Maybe they have limitations like we do. We don't know. I don't know. But on his last visit, he ran so cold on the cards that he played very few hands. He was lucky enough to get action on the hands that he did hit, chipping up to about $460 over a two-hour span. He says, how tight is too tight? Really, I had no business getting that much action on the hands I won, considering how infrequently I was playing in the pot. I usually try to mix it up a little and play some interesting hands, but when you get junk the whole time and then a couple of monsters but nothing in between, is it right to just play tight and look more like a rock than you actually are? Or should you try to make things happen and risk blowing off some chips as an investment in getting action in the big hands when and if they come? What do you think?
Well, certainly every good player has an advertising budget.
Yep.
And you have to be willing to show down some weak hands every once in a while so folks know that you're not just playing the goods.
Yeah.
But, you know, I do understand where Daniel's coming from because, you know, we've all run bad at times. I mean, not running bad as far as our results, but just getting an endless stream of seven deuce.
Yeah, cold. Running cold.
Yeah, yeah. And then when you get pocket kings or pocket aces, I mean, you're not going to fold them, right? You got to play them. So I don't know. In a cash game, I don't know whether I'm too worried about being too tight. Are you?
No. One of the things that I'm interested in is the players that were at his table, if they had a lot of turnover or not, and that's why he got the action, because maybe a lot of players either weren't paying attention or weren't
right.
there long enough to know he was sitting there for 2 hours playing three hands. So
right.
That's one thing that might have contributed to him getting action. The other thing, too, is a lot of people at that, you know, $2, $3, a lot of guys, you know, they're loose. They like to just, they're action junkies. They like to play and like to see a lot of hands, and they like to try to outplay you, and when they can't or when they get a piece of it, they think it might be good no matter how tight you are. And it's just, you know, I notice that a lot. When I get hands, I usually get action no matter what, how tight I am or how loose I am. So it just, I think it's the nature of the game he was in. You know, $100 buy-in, you know, it doesn't seem like they're going to do too much damage to somebody's bankroll there. So they're probably just giving him action and getting paid off. So, but I think you can be too tight. I think, you know, if you sit there too long and only play one hand an hour, you know, no, if they're any kind of poker player, they're not going to play with you. So, yeah, you need to open up your range a little bit there and get some, like you said, advertising out of there.
Right, and of course we don't know whether he was limited to that $100 buy-in, but if not, I mean, obviously if you stand at a 2-3 table and you only buy in for $100, you're already advertising to the table that you're probably pretty tight.
Yeah, that little moths come out of your purse.
But yeah, no, I think I guess the best answer to this question is what the table is like. You know, if you get a lot of people paying attention to you, or they're you know, action junkies, like you said, you know, it's a little different than if it's a table where, you know, people aren't paying attention.
Yeah,
and are playing a lot like you. So
absolutely.
All right. Well, excellent letter, Daniel from New Zealand, and we will happily send you a set of Texas Hold'em strategy cards from Great Poker Hands. com. And everybody else, send your mailbag questions to podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and you too could be a weekly winner.
You know, Scott, last week in the 1 minute mystery, it was part 5, and we had 3,200 in chips, and the level was 50 and 100. A mid position limped, and we looked down at Jack-Jack mm-hmm. and decide to make it 4x, pretty standard 400. But now the button was behind us, obviously. It goes all in for 2,900, and then the big blind calls the all in. Now, the big blind had less, so it's still a matter of calling 2,900, which essentially is all our chips because we raised 400 with 3,200, so we'd only have 2,800 left. So we're all in too if we call. Now the original limper folds, and he wanted to know, do we feel lucky? You know, something tells me that you and I agree that we don't want to have to deal with luck in poker. So what do you think?
Yeah, my no way were the first two words that came up to me. I'm not facing two players for almost all my stack. You know, I only got 400 invested in here. There's going to be a better spot. I mean, you're really rolling the dice that you're going to hit a set or something here, or that your jacks are actually good against two players and going to hold up. I, you know, really, I mean,
better spot.
I think this is an easy fold.
Yeah, absolutely. We're saying adios, adio, auf Wiedersehen, ciao, later, goodbye.
Can you say goodbye in New Zealandish?
Goodbye, mate. How's that?
All right. Maybe that's good.
But really, we only had 400 chips. Say goodbye to them, and we're still around with 2,800. Still early. That's pretty much 30 big blinds, 28 big blinds. So, hey, I'm folding. And the forums are the same thing. Everybody in the forums is like, fold, fold, fold.
Yeah, so, I'm wondering if a club is trying to set us up here, because this one just seems too easy, doesn't it?
Yeah, it seems kind of easy to fold.
Everybody in the world, even if they don't play poker, has agreed with us on folding here.
But, you know, you got to remember, too, this is a different type of one-minute mystery. We're playing the entire tournament with him rather than...
I know, that's what I'm saying. Maybe he's setting us up for another hand later down. You know, I'm trying to do some second-level thinking on Columbo while riding shotgun with him here.
Well, there's your problem right there. All right, well, let's see what happens, and then we'll hear what goes on in part six.
Greetings, this is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com, and this is episode 6 of Ride Along with Columbo. If you recall where we left off, we have Jack-Jack facing an all-in. There's a big difference in pushing the action as opposed to calling the action. Let me digress. There's an old movie about pickpockets called Harry in Your Pocket. His motto? Harry never holds. Well, then my motto is, Columbo doesn't gamble. We just did this to another player a few hands ago, knowing his call would be awful. Calling here would be awful for us, too. Just gonna have to wave bye-bye to my 400 chips, like paying an informant for a good tip. I let it go to see the big blind called with king-queen, but the button shows pocket queens. Flop has a jack in it, turn has a 10, river has a king, and the big blind draws out and wins with a pair of kings. Ironically, gambling would have tripled us up with a set.
I don't know, sir. Are we ever going to get a break in this case?
So moving on, we are in the 8160 level and have bled down to 2100 due to an extreme case of card drought and folding our jack-jack, and no situations to take advantage of. Three folds to us in mid-position, and I look down at ace of diamonds, seven of spades. Not a great hand, but maybe we can get away with a steal here. I raise to 480, and our friend on the left flats again. The rest all fold, the pot is 1200, and the flop, king of diamonds, seven of clubs, ace of hearts. I check, expecting my friend to bet, but he fools me by checking behind. The turn is the king of spades. What do you think? Do we bet now? And how much?
Don't you ever get tired? Tired of constantly getting the red carpet treatment?
Good evening.
Tired of having all your worries taken care of and knowing that there's a place reserved for you?
Right this way, sir.
Of course you don't. That's why you join PokerStars. After all, our VIP club awards over $3.6 million worth of major on- and offline tournament entries every month. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out more about why other reward schemes just don't open as many doors. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
Well, Scott, it's one of the more depressing weeks for me on the show because we're going to be talking about tips for Omaha 8.
Yeah, it's one of the greatest games ever created. Yeah. Actually, that should have been on the list of five best moments in poker history. Person who created Omaha 8.
Well,
certainly,
we know who that person is. It's Satan. So you're saying that Satan created, you know, one of the greatest moments in poker history. I don't know about that.
Well, obviously, our next Apes event's coming up. It's September 9th, 9 p.m., always on PokerStars.com.
Yes.
Password is anti-up. And, of course, coming up on August 26th, also at 9 p.m. Eastern, is your free roll chance to win one of those coveted seats in the next event. And before we get into our tips, our winner of the most recent Apes event, XTR Steve, was a little tardy on calling the hotline, but that doesn't mean that we don't appreciate his effort anymore.
That's right.
Or actually any less, right?
Let's just play the clip.
Well, congratulations, Steve. We appreciate that. And a reminder to send us a picture with your banana and your monkey. We've only gotten one. All year.
One out of like eight.
Seven. No, seven already.
Seven. Oh, my God.
And only one person, after we paid all that postage, you know how much tape costs to stick the little labels on the banana? And time and effort. And we go through all that, and only one person all year has sent us a photo. And we're going to put it in the magazine. You're going to be famous.
Sad.
People are going to come up to you asking for your to autograph their banana. But only if your picture is in our magazine.
That's
so,
like
Steve,
how they going to know you got one?
Exactly. So, Steve, I hope you break that string. And whoever wins the Omaha 8 event, I hope you do as well, too. But, Chris, I was being generous to you because I know you you hate this game.
Yeah.
You would like to abolish it from the face of the earth.
Yeah.
And therefore, I let you handle the low-hanging fruit, as I like to call it.
Thank you.
And then I came in with the very insightful tips on top of that.
Well, here's the thing. My one favorite thing about Omaha 8 is the one word in the whole world, and that's scoop. It's a real easy tip. I'm really sorry. But really, people forget it. You know, I mean, I understand that there's more chances to win a high than a low, but really you want to be in there with a quality hand that has no orphans, that are just playing hands that have scoop potential, like ace, deuce, three, and then maybe a suited card for the ace or something. You really want to play hands that can win both ends if you're going to get involved.
Very good point. You can retire well now.
Thank you.
Because if people remember the scoop, that's all they need to remember.
That's right.
All right, my first tip. Yeah, scoop is always the goal. but a third of the hands have no low, so high cards can scoop too, so remember that. Early in a tournament, you might want to splash around a little bit. You might get lucky, and if not, you've established an image that you can exploit later on when the blinds make speculating too expensive. So I'm not trying to confuse our listeners here after your wonderful, very solid tip on scooping. But remember that the big hands can scoop too. You just don't want to get wrapped up in the big hands later in the tournament because, you know, when the flop comes with three low cards, then you're kind of screwed.
Yeah.
But early on, have some fun.
All right, well, my second tip is unless you're in the blinds, don't leave the gate without an ace-deuce and preferably another wheel card in your hand so you'll have backup in case you're counterfeited. And, of course, for those who don't understand, counterfeited means that the deuce in your hand comes on the board, so now you can't play it in your own hand, and you want another card in your hand to make a low. So you're looking for ace, deuce, three, ace, deuce, four, ace, deuce, five, or even if you can, two, three, four, five, something like that. If you're, you know, but if you're in the blinds, you know, it's okay maybe to speculate a little bit, but just get ready to prepare, throw your hand away if you have to. But if you're going to enter a pot willingly, try to have ace, deuce in your hand.
Yeah,
and
absolutely. Yep. All right, my following up on that, avoid the middle cards. Ideally, you want wheel cards or paint, just like my good buddy said. But those middle cards, while they may make some straights, you're going to have to share the pot unless you have a low two. Just remember what kind of cards are going to make those straights. So if you have, you know, 8-9, either you're going to have the weak end of the straight or you're going to have a straight that makes a low out there.
Yeah.
And again, we want to scoop.
Yeah. And you know what, too? Typically, straights aren't strong enough to win a Omaha pot anyway. So if you're flopping a straight, you may end up, you know, be getting whipsawed with somebody who made a low, and then the board pairs, and somebody's got a boat, and you're in the middle with a middle straight. So it's really just good to avoid them for a lot of reasons. And then to piggyback on my last one, even though you're playing ace-deuce, don't overbet your ace-deuce hands, because especially if there's heavy action, there's a good chance that you're getting quartered or worse, because everyone's thinking like you, I have to have an ace-deuce in my hand. And you could have two or three guys at the table who have ace-deuce, and meanwhile a guy who has a high hand only, and you're just losing money every time you're putting money in the pot. So, you know, be cautious with the ace-deuce as well. Don't take it to the end of your bankroll.
Yeah, and I guess the point to be made there is to remember that you have four cards in your hand, and you really should have four good cards in your hand. So, I mean, I think that's the biggest thing beginners do. They get ace-deuce, and they think they've got pocket aces, and it's just not the same. So you got to be able to withstand some raises. And to do that, you need to have good cards backing it up. So,
absolutely.
Very good tip. You did well with your three
picks.
Thanks,
buddy. Of course, they were low-hanging fruit. they were so low-hanging, I was just looking down on the ground and picking up the rotten apples. That's basically what I was doing. But I can't wait to hear your last one.
All right, I'm gonna speculate a little with the last one, but I kind of like this one. Let others be nuts about the nuts. Sure, it's a game of nuts, but you can play into that by raising with a third nut low sometimes to squeeze out second nut lows. A wonderful tip from probably one of the best Omaha players out there, Mike Mattisau. Obviously, you want to scoop, but remember that everybody else is thinking that they want to scoop. And, you know, there's nothing worse when you have ace tray and there's three low cards on the board and you think you might be good, but somebody starts putting pressure, then all of a sudden, you know, hey, they got to have ace deuce, so I'm going to fold. That's exactly what you want to do when you have ace four.
Yeah.
Or deuce tray or something like that, particularly if you've got, you know, a draw to the high or something like that that gives you some backup. Be some creative with your bets on that and play into other people's fears about scooping.
That's an interesting point. I mean, I like that, and I've tried that a few times. I do know that I've lost some pretty big pods trying that too. But it is good advice, and it makes sense. And especially if you know your players and you know that they're kind of tight or would be smart enough to let an ace three go, thinking the ace deuce is out there, and then you win it with ace four, and that's pretty smart. I like that scoop.
All right, very good. Well, we'll see everybody again on September 9th at 9 p.m., and then again on before that, August 26th for the free roll. Come play Omaha with the Brazilians and win your seat in and win all that great stuff, that banana, the monkey, and money, too. There's money involved.
Go figure.
Welcome to the Anti-Up PokerCast. I'm Mike DeMouth Mattiso, author of my new book, Check Raising the Devil.
Chris, good news. Lee is all right. Lee Childs, our good friend, he's fine. Even though you forgot to put him in the car last week, he was curled up on your front porch like we thought, so very nice.
Well, he had flashbacks to his third grade drill when they said to any child who has lost his parents or is lost to walk up to a police officer,
yes,
and say, "My name is Lee Childs, and I don't know where my family is." And
yes,
then they took care of everything, so we took care of him. He's okay, he's safe, and he's back in the Anti-Up green room.
Excellent, very good. Well, you know, that's good because, you know, people love having Lee do the Hand of the Week, so we're happy to have him back. Lee Childs, founder of AcumenPoker.net and a brand new Lock Poker Pro and all-around great superstar. Lee, thanks for coming back.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for rescuing me. And thanks for letting the cat out of the bag that I'm the founder of AnyUp. That's awesome.
Yeah. Now we're going to cut him in. We're going to cut him in for a third of the profits.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think we could find 27 cents in the couch cushion for him.
Nice.
All right. So, Lee, you're well rested. So, we want to throw something a little different at you this time. We've got an audio hand of the week straight from Alex Trebek and the good folks at Jeopardy. Or more likely, Devin from Atlanta. Who actually was able to squeeze a hand of the week into two calls to our hotline. So that's very efficient since it usually takes me about 20 minutes to hack a hand on hand of the week. So what we're going to do is we're just going to play the hand here from Devin, and then rather than break it down step by step, we'll just talk about the hand in general. So, Chris, play that clip.
Hey, guys. This is Devin from Atlanta, Georgia. I was just giving you a call. I had a little question to see if maybe I could have played a little different. I know it was 1 cent, 2 cents at Full Tilt Poker, but I just wanted to see if I did anything just drastically wrong and see if you guys can give me a help. Played at Full Tilt. I had $2.27. I have a tight player on my left. He's got $1.51. And then over around, I have a loose player on my right at 50 cents. I just hit the loose player for the $1.27. I doubled through him and actually took a little more from him. So he's a little crazy right now. I pick up the king of diamonds and the king of clubs, and I am the small blind with the tight player being the big blind. The loose player calls the 2 cents, and then I raise to 8 cents. I get a call by both players. The flop is four of spades, 10 of diamonds, 2 of hearts. I bet 8 into 24-cent pot. And I get a call by the tight player, and the loose player folds for some reason. I bet 8 because I wanted an ace-10 to re-raise me, maybe. The turn is a 7 of diamonds, and I feel like I'm done with the pot. There's 40 in the pot. I bet 28 cents. And amazingly, the tight player calls me. What do I put him on? I thought maybe jacks or queens. And if he had 10s, I would think he would raise me. So I didn't know exactly what to do. The river was a 5 of spades, and I bet 60 into the pot, and he just calls and turns over the 5 of diamonds and the 5 of hearts. hey guys, help me. I need to know what to do.
All right, so let me summarize it here real quick before you two wonderful players start dissecting it here. But our hero raised small blind with pocket kings. He got a fairly safe flop there, 10 high. Betted out, got this loose crazy guy out, but the tight guy stayed in and kept betting it all the way down, and ended up getting rivered. So my first question is, it's always tough, I think, to play these big hands in the small blind. So that's the first thing I want to talk about.
In what we've learned from Lee the last couple of times too, I think that the raise probably isn't enough at this size. But maybe he wanted action because he had kings. I don't know. But it felt like to me that probably 8 cent raise with a caller already and the guy behind him probably wasn't enough. What do you think, Lee?
It's okay. You know, I like to stick to if the table standard and my normal raise is three times the big blind. If there's just one limper, then I'll make it four times. But when I'm out of position, sometimes I'm more likely to go to like four and a half or five times in this case with one limper. Just raising a little bit more to compensate for the fact that I'm out of position. So I want to do that with hands that I want action on, and I want to do that with hands that I don't want action on. You never actually know if you're going to want the action or not. So, you know, it's better to just be consistent. The 8 cent raise is fine, but anywhere from 8 to 10 cents should be fine, as long as 6 cents is the standard raise for the table, and we don't really know if that's the case. But if it's normally an 8 to 10 cent raise, which sometimes in the smaller limit games, you do have like a 4 or 5x raise. So I would definitely make it a little bit higher if the standard raise is a little more.
Now, Lee, what goes through your mind when you you make a raise from the small blind, and then you have a tight player in the big blind, and he calls? Is it normally a worrisome there?
It's not that worrisome because, you know, this guy knows that he's going to have position on you. If the player assumes that you have a big hand, then he could still be playing things like suited connectors and small pairs. Just because he's tight doesn't mean he's not going to call with position on you with hands that might play well against your big hand. So, I don't think you really get a lot of information about what kind of hand he might have. Certainly the pairs and suited connectors, the smaller pairs are the most likely things in his range, I would expect, since he's pretty tight, that he's going to re-raise with his bigger hands. I'd look for anything probably, I don't know, jacks or tens and below and any kind of suited connector that he could be calling with in this spot.
Okay, so we get our two callers, and then we get, which is probably as good a flop as you can get with pocket kings without a king on it, four spades, ten of diamonds, two of hearts. And our hero just bet 8 cents into this pot. Not enough?
Yeah, I'd like to see a bet of like 16 cents. You know, you want to, this is another case of making a bet because it looks like he's looking to, you know, try to get some action here. And when he only bets a third of the pot, you're not really going to get, any kind of idea of what your opponent is actually on. it's a great board. So I want to go ahead and be consistent, though, and bet two-thirds of the pot. I think the minimum you'd bet here is 12 cents, but I'd like to go to about 16 cents. And this is whether I've hit the flop or not, or whether it's a good flop for my kings or not. If it came ace high, I'm still going to bet the 16 cents. I've represented a lot of strength pre-flop, and I'm going to continue with just two players in the hand against me. I'm going to make my standard continuation bet that's going to be two-thirds of the pot, and make sure that you're not betting that smaller amount just to try to get action.
Yeah, I almost never bet a third of the pot ever when I'm first to act and I want to bet. I mean, I just don't think that's enough. This guy could have easily had a suited ace that fits into a wheel draw now. I mean, I realize he's tight, but he's in a blind, so it's not like he has to be that tight to make a call of your 8 cent raise earlier. So he could easily have ace five of hearts, ace three of hearts, you know, anything like that, and you're just giving him a nice, easy chance to, with some implied odds, to stack you with a wheel. So I would have definitely bet at least two thirds there myself.
All right, so we get the crazy button guy out of the way, but we're heads up with our tight big blind. And what kind of range are we thinking about now when he calls? I mean, obviously you mentioned maybe small pairs, so a set could be possible, slow playing it here. I don't know what else he might have here other than maybe the Cosenza or something like that. I mean, or what Chris said, maybe a wheel draw. But
yeah,
are we missing other possibilities?
He could definitely have the Cosenza. He could have pretty much any pair, really. You know, with since it's a rainbow board and it comes 10 high, you know, I think anything 9s and below will still call. Jacks, you may even get just a call out of jacks, but jacks are usually going to raise in this spot, I think, because they're not going to want to see any overcards come on the turn and either get bluffed off of a hand or, you know, just to even let you get there. To begin with, if you had some overcards with like an ace, king, king, queen type of hand. But I think really anything jacks and below can call you here. And, you know, I'm not really thinking suited connectors at this point, unless it's, as Chris said, that suited ace and he's got some type of gut shot draw, you know, and maybe he called with like an ace, deuce, ace, four type of hand. But I think you know, it's possible with a suited connector, like a 4-5, something like that. He could still be in there, but a lot of people are going to raise to, quote, find out where they're at in this spot and just go ahead and try to take it down. So when he calls, I think it's probably a suited ace or some type of pair.
All right, now let me ask both of you guys this, because I know Chris likes to do this move, but the floating is real popular now. Is this a board, if you were the big blind, that you would float in? Because you're talking about a smaller pair or something like that. My instinct would be to raise the initial raiser here and find out how strong he really is. But I don't know. What would you guys do if you were the big blind in this hand?
Well, I would just call. When I'm floating, I don't do it as often as like Mike Fassel likes to think. You know, I just told him what floating was once, and he thinks I do it all the time now. But when I float, I'm basically floating with nothing or overs. I have a made hand here, and this is a pretty good flop for, you know, if I'm this other guy, which I now know he has pocket fives. But if I didn't know he had fives, I would have put him on like eights. And if I had eights, I don't mind calling here and seeing what he does in a turn. And if he does present weakness, then I know I'm ahead, especially with that seven coming. But if I'm going to float, it's going to be really with overs and nothing.
Well, I guess that's what I'm saying. If you're not going to float, then wouldn't you raise with your fives here?
No, again, I think I would just call with my... If I had fives here, I would just call and see what he does in a turn.
Yeah, that's kind of a... I don't know that I'd raise with fives because I think that if you're ahead, then, you know, he probably doesn't have many cards to catch to beat you, and you know, you've actually got a hand with some showdown value here, so if you're ahead and you think you're ahead, and again, you know, just because he fires again on the turn doesn't mean that you're now behind. You know, if you're going to call with fives and you've got him on two overs or something like that, which would be a pretty narrow range to put our hero on here, but I definitely agree with Chris that I would rather float with nothing, than, you know, call with the fives and consider that a float. Like, I don't really consider that a float. I consider, you know, he's calling to keep the pot manageable. Doesn't need to play a big pot with his fives. You know, he could have the hero could have like a, you know, even an ace four if he's playing pretty loose. That he might decide he's going to re-raise with. And so you don't really find out how strong your opponent is sometimes when they bet. Just find out they're willing to put more money into the pot. So I think calling with fives in this spot is fine from the villain.
All right, the turn comes seven of diamonds, putting two diamonds there, and our hero puts out more than a half pot bet here, 28 cents. Seems reasonable to me, but prove me wrong, someone.
Can't do it. I like the size of the bet in this spot.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with it. I mean, it's at least it's more than half the pot, so that's good. Three quarters of the pot, two thirds of the pot is always decent here.
Yeah.
All right. Now let's talk about the call from our hero with 28 cents with just the fives.
He clearly doesn't believe him. That's just the thing. And when sometimes I remember a long time ago when we first started the show, Scott, you thought that rocks and calling stations are the same thing.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I just wonder if maybe this person thinks that too, that it's not that he's tight, it's that he doesn't believe you and he's a calling station. That's what I'm wondering, because really, I mean, to have a pair of eyes and to keep calling, he clearly just does not believe this guy. And it's probably not enough money, you know, in his bankroll to think that it's worth folding. So, to me, I think he doesn't believe him. I don't think he's tight. I think he's a calling station.
Yeah, and I think, well, it's one of those, you know, it's similar. If you've called with the fives and you think your fives are good, then just because a seven of diamonds comes doesn't really change your hand that much. So it's also fine to call, and, you know, I don't know if we, you know, he may be a calling station, he may be pretty tight, he may actually be a pretty solid player, and he's just trying to play a small pot, not believing, you know, no, we'll get to the river and probably dissect whether or not he's a solid player or not a little bit more, but, you know, I think that, you know, the call with the fives here is fine. I mean, you know, I've definitely made calls like this. If I just simply didn't believe somebody, it's kind of tough to do online sometimes. But if you just really have a feeling that you're still ahead and your opponent is just, you know, making a second barrel bluff here, then I think it's fine to call.
Okay, and then the river, of course, is at the five of spades, which not that our opponent needed to improve. Well, I guess he did need to improve, right?
Nope! I tell you, it's not much really got there. I mean, you know, we talked about the wheel draw that could have gotten there if he did have, say, the ace three of hearts, but really, 3-6 isn't played in this hand. There's no way this guy has 3-6. So, I mean, I don't blame him for betting 60 cents there, but, you know, sets could have gotten there too. Maybe a check call here would be a lot easier. But it does show a lot, too, that the guy only calls with a set of fives. What's he afraid of? So I don't think he's that good of a player to just call with a set there. I mean, really, only set of tens or set of sevens, really, the way it's been played, beat him. So it's amazing that the guy just calls.
Yeah, and he doesn't really have much behind at this point, too. I didn't do the math, but it's at least about a buck he's put in this pot already, so he has 50 cents behind.
Yeah.
I would think that if you felt that your set of fives was good, you'd get paid off with that extra bet.
Yeah, and I'm definitely betting my kings here. I'm not really worried about that five. This is, you know, obviously I'd have been wrong, but you know, you're not going to see, you know, that a turned or rivered set is like the hardest thing to ever see anyway. But you know, and I'm certainly not putting the player on pocket fives at this point, and I'm not going to check fold thinking it got there. You know, so I mean, I feel like my hand's probably good, and I'm gonna bet for value with my kings because I'm thinking that a hand like ace 10, even like a 9-10 suited or jack 10 suited, will pay this off a lot of times. You know, the board didn't change for them very much either. If they were ahead on the flop, they're now only getting beat by a turned or a rivered set. So I think the bet's fine there by our hero, and I can't believe that the other player just calls. I can't, you know, a lot of people do this where they're afraid on the river because it's possible that there's a straight there.
Yeah.
But that's if you just look at the river and look at, okay, what's the best hand, what's the second best hand, and so forth. And, you know, if you're calling all the way with fives and you hit your set, you know, you've got to now hope that your opponent has something like aces or kings and is going to pay you off. From the other side, I think, well, first of all, the guy should definitely have put in the rest of his chips. And at this point, this, you know, there's so much in the pot, but I think the kings would definitely have to fold here. Especially with his assessment of the other player, you know, having him as a tight player to call two bets and then be able to raise on the river one pair is just very unlikely to be good at that point.
I mean, it's so weird because, you know, you put this opponent on being a calling station or someone who doesn't believe you, and then when he makes a set, he's afraid of you. It makes no sense. I mean, it's totally counterintuitive. I don't understand how he just calls on the end there.
Yeah, players lose a lot of value that way. You know, I mean, if you're going to be lucky enough to hit a set in a pot like this, you just have to raise it on the end. You can't be afraid that what could you be afraid of that he had 6-8 the whole way?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, there's you got to raise.
Now let me ask about the hero's bet, 60 into a 96 cent pot. Is that a value bet or is that too much for a value bet?
No, I think it's fine. For river bets, you know, we've talked a lot about, you know, on the flop and on the turn, and I like to stick with about 2/3 if I'm going to bet. And then on the river, you really want to bet what you, if you're making a value bet, you want to bet what you think you can get paid. And if you're bluffing, then you want to make a bet that you think they can't call, or that you think will look strong so that they won't call. You know, sometimes that's actually a smaller bet. Sometimes the smaller bets will get folds more often than your bigger bets on the river. But I think in this case, the way that he's bet this, you know, he bet small on the flop. He bet about 2/3 or 3/4 on the turn. And I think a 2/3 size bet is fine here. I think your ace 10, jack 10, 9-10, any of those kind of hands are still going to call you. It's possible that even like 9s or 8s still make a call here if they think they were good. And certainly your jacks and queens, if he just, you know, had a hand like that, that he, you know, wasn't wanting to raise for some reason, then you're going to get a lot of hands that are worse than yours to still pay you off. So I think that's a fine bet.
Well, Lee, it's great having you back. We're glad you're all right and everything. And your analysis is always spot on. And we want to thank Devin from Atlanta for doing the audio hand of the week this week. Devin, email us your email address at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And we will give you a $10 online staking package from getastake.com. You can do a lot of 10 bucks with a penny, 2 cents, I think. And if anybody else has a hand of the week, also send it to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And hopefully Lee will keep coming back and giving you much better advice than I can.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Lee. All right. Another good show. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
And we'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.